Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Talking Comics Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 17th, 2025, and you are listening to episode 719. I am your host, Aaron Amos, and I am joined this week, as always, by Mr. Bob Ryer.
Well, quick happy birthday to our dear friends Hugh Perry and Sarah Miles.
Also, we got Steve Say.
Happy birthday
to
you.
Nope. That just cost us 48 cents. We had to pay to Paul McCartney.
Happy birthday, everybody.
All the listeners just went sterile.
Wow.
Wow. So, our other host, John Burkle, Joey Pacino, Bronwyn Kelly Say, are off doing better things. They're on assignment. Bringing the good stuff back to us whenever they return.
Listen, school's in session, man.
We are going to do a threefer, this week. But we're going to entertain everyone, I'm sure. We're going to do our lightning rounds and all that stuff, talk about comics, a couple of things happening in the world. And I think I'm going to switch things up this time. And we're going to have a little bit of that chat before we do our lightning rounds. So,
breaking news.
Good. There were a couple of things. One thing I wanted to bring up, breaking news. Poor went out for Robert Redford.
I didn't see that. Oh, my.
Passed away at the age of 89. An icon. He was one of those. I put him up there with like the Paul Newmans and those guys that were just like the archetype for the leading man.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly just never in my head imagined how old he was. So when I actually saw that he was 89 years old, a great life. He certainly had the movie star career. I mean, he's, like I said, he's the archetype of the movie star leading man. And that was that. So poor went out for
Mr. Redford. Yeah, started in the live TV days and then did like every television show imaginable, a memorable Twilight Zone episode.
Yep.
Before being sort of romantic lead in movies like Barefoot in the Park. And then all of a sudden he was, in capital letters, Robert Redford, between Butch Cassidy and 3 Days of the Condor and Let's Go On and On and On. I mean, just an amazing performer and the champion of independent films with the Sundance Film Festival that he was so much a part of. Can't say enough good things about a really great man.
And I think sometimes people forget that the role that he played in Sundance and what that, how that even probably paved the way for a lot of, the smaller independent, movie houses that we have. I wonder, would we have an A24 if it wasn't for something like
Tarantino and Kevin Smith and that whole generation of 90s indie guys?
Yeah. I tell you, I was talking to someone earlier when we learned that he passed away and they were trying to figure out, it's like, I've always known who he was, but I don't know if I've actually ever seen any of his movies. And so they went through the list and they had seen more than they thought, but didn't realize that he was in some other movies. So, like I said, iconic movie star.
In this day and age, the movie to watch, I'll be biased and just say it this way. All the President's Men with Dustin Hoffman.
I'm going to raise you that.
Okay.
See that and raise you a sneakers.
Okay.
I don't care what anyone says.
People just absolutely love that movie. So yeah,
I really like that movie. Yeah. I don't know. It was just interesting. It was just fun to me. I don't know.
Good cast of fabulous idea.
At the same time, I will say, I also chuckled a few times at Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis. So, I can't be trusted.
That is, I love that movie. I'm, that's a you fun and I are movie. The only people who do, but
I chuckled all the way through that movie, but apparently I was on an island unto myself, when that
No,
was the case. But
people didn't get it. I have the DVD, and there's a commentary track by the director. And he describes one of the scenes that Roger Ebert was complaining about. Look, they're looking out the right hand, the passenger side window of the car, and you're looking at Manhattan across the Hudson River. And then they cut to the reverse going left, and you go look out the left window, and there's the Hudson River. He said, yes, I did that on purpose. It was done on purpose as if people were paying attention. There's a reason that William Conrad from Rocky and Bullwinkle is narrating the movie. It's all a fable fairy tale. It's supposed to be funny. And no one got it. We got it. The three of us got it. I love it. Maybe we can
So,
add that to movies people shouldn't watch, but we'll watch and have fun doing kind of thing.
hey, I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
Weird movies that no one else remembers. So, other things that happened in the world this past weekend were the Emmy Awards. Why am I bringing that up? Well, I'm bringing that up because Andor won an Emmy for outstanding writing. If I remember correctly, outstanding writing in a drama series for the episode "Welcome to the Rebellion." I guess it was episode 9 of the season. And it's sort of a—I don't know—I think it's a pathway towards, not a pathway towards, but it's just the realization that these things are legitimate. These things are dramas. These, yes, they are science fiction, and they have all the pow whiz bangs and all that stuff, but it's okay now in mixed company and in mixed circles to actually say, hey, that was actually a good product. So I was kind of happy to see that. So often those types of shows get completely overlooked by the awards committees. And so I just thought that was something worth mentioning. So if you're out there watching Andor, you can do it with respect in your head held high. So there you have it. So you're bona fide now.
Boner fied?
Bona fide.
Bona
Okay.
fide, okay.
All right. We're gonna get this done early so Steve can apparently go crank on out later.
Whoa, okay. That's
So,
getting edited out.
watch him forget. That's what I can't wait to see him forget that it's there.
It is early in the show, yeah, but he's making notes, so.
There you have it.
Boy, am I ever.
Another thing that I wanted to bring up as I take a sip of my soda. Steve actually put this in our little internal chat earlier today. I'm going to read, parts of the article, but basically it's in Variety. And it points out Disney launched new digital comics platform with Webtoon. I'm sorry, with Webtoon Entertainment acquires 2% stake in Webtoon. Says new service to feature 35,000 plus comics from Marvel, Star Wars, Disney, Pixar, 20th Century Studios. So I'm not going to go through the entire article, but I'll just read some of the highlights. Disney is getting more serious about digital comics. The Mouse House entered into an agreement with webcomic specialist Webtoon Entertainment to create an all new digital comics platform. Sounds familiar. Stocked with more than 35,000 titles from across Disney's portfolio dating back decades. I can't read. I promise you I was educated. Disney is positioning the new platform as an expansion to Marvel Unlimited, Marvel's current digital comic subscription service, priced starting at $10 per month. The companies didn't provide an expected launch date for the new service, so I guess we'll believe it when we see a trailer. The new Disney service will include comics from Marvel, Star Wars, Disney, Pixar, and 20th Century Studios, available for the first time in a single digital comics service with one subscription. The service will also include a selection of Webtoon original stories. And if you want to read the rest of that, you can go to Variety and check it out yourself. But what do we think that means for the comics industry when Disney is turning its eye towards, giving options to for how to read it? What are we thinking here?
You want me to go
Yeah.
first?
Go ahead.
Go.
So, when I saw this story, like I said, I just saw the headline and threw it in the chat. But now that you're reading it, it's reminding me of Disney's announcement that they were partnering with, I believe it's the developers. I don't know if it's Epic exactly. But they're partnering with the developers of Fortnite to create their own like live service Fortnite-like experience with Disney characters. And I think this is just another part of them branching out and trying to look beyond their Disney adult audience and try to recapture some of the youth. The Nintendo is doing a lot of those same things, and their Nintendo's going even younger. They're developing like apps and programs and stuff for infants currently, with Mario and Yoshi and a couple of other characters to try and hook them in really, really, really young, because the people that love these things, that flock to them and put down the most money, that's us. And we're getting older and we're aging out of some of this stuff. And kids don't consume content like they used to. Everything is through screens now instead of word of mouth and hype and whatnot. So honestly, I think it's a smart move for them to grab a little piece of the Webtoon pie, given the accessibility of Webtoon and how many people can read these comics and learn about these characters and then see these characters in movies and then go and see them and basically start the machine and start the cycle over again with younger generations, or at least attempt to do so, because what they're doing right now, it ain't working for them like it used to. And so desperate times call for desperate measures. And if the House of Mouse wants to keep swimming in Scrooge McDuck's money bin, they're gonna have to get innovative, and maybe a move like this is the way to go. Because honestly, if you get like some of these independent creators that have brought stuff to Webtoon, like Lore Olympus and Heartstopper, and all these incredible talents that are on there, give them the keys to the Magic Kingdom and have them make stories with these Disney characters, that could be tremendous. Like, even just from a reading perspective, that could be awesome. So, I mean, I don't know about the money and all the business politics, and at the end of the day, Disney is just as evil as any other corporation. The same goes with Marvel, but it's going to exist anyway, and honestly, I'm pretty excited to see what they end up doing with us. So that's my little piece.
So do you think some part of this, and not just this one, but one of the services we're going to talk about shortly, but and then there's another service that's out there that I saw advertised while I was watching a comics related video about a similar new product out here that's going to be able you're going to be able to go get your comics digital. Do you think everyone is just seeing how basically Amazon dropped them all when they took over Comixology, and basically things have just gone into the crapper, and that, similar to the way, Fios came along when everyone was going to, when everyone was on Comcast and
Yeah.
creating options.
Or how Diamond is out of business.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all this
Yeah.
stuff doesn't pop up overnight, right? Like, you got to develop these things, you got to design them, you got to come up with an infrastructure for purchasing, for reading, and what have you. So I think, like I said, I think the writing's been on the wall
Yeah.
for a long time, and I think it started, like it really started when the switchover for Comixology happened, and that there was that huge upheaval. Like, it seemed to only last a few weeks, maybe a few months, but I think the echoes of that really sent a message to the people that are creating these new things. And honestly, like, it's kind of a changing of the guard, because, like I said, like, we're not, I'm not trying to be all weird about it or anything, but like, we're not getting any younger. And if they want these industries to keep going, they need to come up with ways to hook other readers and get people interested. The entertainment industry as a whole is in a very precarious place right now. Movies aren't doing as well as they used to. Porting things over to streaming is kind of the way to go, but then you lose that box office. It's a mess.
Yeah,
And go ahead, Bob.
I was gonna say,
Go
but
ahead,
go ahead,
Adam.
Bob. I was just gonna say, but if you look at read between the lines of that article, well, actually, you don't have to read between the lines. Just look at what they're actually saying. Disney is under the impression that there is a an untapped vein out there where comics are concerned, or at least consuming their products via that medium.
Sure.
Which kind of makes me, I'm never going to be like, "Ooh, Disney needs to make more money." But, if it gives us more options and opportunities to celebrate our fandom, then I'm okay with that. But go ahead, Bob.
Couple things. One, are they discontinuing Marvel Unlimited?
I don't think so. But what it
Okay,
does
so they're
say here is that as
competing
part
with
of,
themselves.
so it says here, as part of the Disney Plus Perks program, Disney Plus subscribers will be able to access a curated selection of comic titles in the new app at no additional charge. I'm not sure what that means, but I don't get the impression, based on what they said previously, that they are getting rid of
Holy
Marvel
sh.
Unlimited. But go ahead, sorry.
So not all of what Marvel Unlimited is doing will be imported or exported over there, it
I
sounds
don't
like. Okay,
think
it's
so.
curated. We are talking about corporations and corporations that have too many bean counters and not enough artists, not enough creators. And so, yes, let's hope that Webtoon stays untainted from this, and we don't end up with more dross. That's all I would hope for. Beyond that, if they're going to make 20th Century Fox Studios, so it's those Predator books that they're crossing over with every Marvel character, who cares? If I wanted Disney, I would wonder, do they have the rights to their real books? The Del Four Colors, the Carl Barks stuff, Steve mentioned Scrooge McDuck, all those great books that are the absolute classics that Disney ever did. Do they own the
Well,
rights to those, or does Western Publishing still own them? I don't
all it
know.
says here is the new service will include comics from Marvel, Star Wars, Disney, Pixar, 20th Century Studios.
There's new Disney, but they're Disney. You remember Disney as a movie company in the 30s and 40s, they weren't yet Disney. Their movies were distributed by RKO. Took a while for them to be Disney proper. So their comics were put out by somebody else. It's only fairly recently, and even then it was Gladstone all through the 80s and 90s. So do they get those rights back, or is it going to be the new junk they put out as opposed to the old stuff, which might be an inducement for a grandpa to show his grandson or granddaughter. This is what I grew up on. These are the greatest Disney comics of all time. That would be nice.
Not a
I'm
bad idea.
sorry to say to pour water on this whole thing, but it's just we are
No,
dealing with corporations, so I'm concerned.
there's an interesting thing going on right now, though. I've seen this book for the last two times that it's been on the list, but I never bothered to look at the creative team. And I don't know that this is a part of that stuff or would be once it goes into effect, but there is an Uncle Scrooge Earth's Mightiest Duck comic right now. And number two came out. It comes out this week. The creative team is Jason Aaron and Esad Ribic.
Yikes.
Like, come on. Mirka Andolfo does, I guess, alternate covers. Joe Caramanga on letters. Like, these are serious creators
How many
on this.
8-year-olds know who those people are and or care?
They don't, but I'm
That's
saying,
what
like, if the
died.
quality is there. I don't know. Like, I kind of want to check this out. This looks
But
really
you'd
cool.
be better not to drop names of one of our favorite creators. Wouldn't you be better off having Kristen Gutznuck do a book like that as opposed to Esad Ribic and Jason Aaron?
I mean, sure, but like, this is just one book. You could give them, any number of characters or whatever. Maybe there's one that Kristen really connects with, or like David or Jeremy, for that matter.
Right, but that just strikes me as it's a sop to get try to get grown-ups to buy a Jason Aaron book.
I mean, it's
That's a
working on
Disney book
me.
for kids. It cheeses me off is what it does.
I
I'm
don't
about
know.
to go on a
Scrooge
rant. I'm
McDuck
going to
meets the
shut up.
Thor team. Let's go. I
No.
don't know. I
All
think it
right.
looks cool.
Well, in an attempt to transition from one comics platform to another, you may have heard us mention a time or two in the past about several of us signing up for Neon Ichiban. It's a beta that has been put out as an alternative to Comixology, where you can acquire digital comics, and there's also a comics marketplace. There's a variety of other things that are slated to be a part of the final product. Now, I will stress This they make a point of saying this when you access it, that this is a beta.
It is a
Now,
beta ass beta.
for if you are someone who signed up for that sort of early adopter approach, I guess we're going to call it that, you got an email, and the email basically told you, click here, sign in, create your account, et cetera, et cetera. And they say all over the place, this is a beta. And they ask that you do what betas are there for. Tell them the things that need to be fixed, and they'll go back and make it better. Apparently, they got some good feedback because there was already another update put out to the site. The first day that I went into it, I honestly, I will give Hugh Perry some credit for this as well. First day we went into it, we were struggling to get in. I think he was trying from his phone. I was trying from my iPad. Wasn't happening right away. And I don't know if it was just because there were so many people banging against it, but the next morning, everything was smooth as silk as we were able to go in there in terms of being able to access it. Bob, you haven't seen this, have you?
No, I
Okay.
haven't.
But Steve has. Okay.
Yep.
So there are a couple of things here that I just wanted to point out. Number one, I will say that I think the format, it does remind me or harken back to some of the things that I really liked about Comixology originally, which is good. I think also having this marketplace is going to be interesting to see how that plays itself out. The way that they allow you to filter things and see your collection, I think, is going to also be something that plays itself out. Right now, the publishers that are here appear to be Dark Horse, DC Distillery. What is this? Koda, I'm sorry. Kodansha. I'm sorry. I'm always able, never able to say that right. Marvel, Oni Press, and Vault. My understanding is that Dynamite is going to be joining, coming soon. I actually went on because I was most excited about being able to check out distillery books, because you heard us say in the past that we see all the distillery books that are identified on League of Comic Book Geeks and all those places that we want to see them. Or for those of us that are pretty much digital, there's not a clean place to be able to just grab them and consolidate them. So I was just curious to see how that worked out. Worked out pretty well. I was able to go in and pick up a book. There are certainly some things that need to be cleaned up. Again, it's a beta. They tell us it's a beta. But if they continue to be as, my opinion is, if they continue to be as engaged and concerned about the structure of this one platform without having to prioritize the larger platform, I'm looking at you, Amazon, and be able to sort of focus on this, I think this has the potential to be something that is really, really good. I read the book that I was able to purchase from Distillery earlier online on the web. It was a really good reading experience. Just slid right through and didn't give me any issues, no hiccups or anything there. So I'm curious. I'm sure, Steve, what was your experience with it?
Honestly, my experience was kind of no experience at all. I finally got in to the to it's not even an app. It's a website, correct? Am I missing something here?
No, it's a site now. I think there's, you may have seen Hugh Perry put into the chat earlier, that he did reach out to the company, and they do say that they have plans for a platform that
Okay.
they would, be putting it on. Again, this is, I think they're trying to, what I took from what he put there was that they're trying to make sure that they don't try to do too much at once.
Right. And I applaud that. Like take your time, build it right, make sure that it's stable and get it out there. I'll say this though, like and it also depends on how long it takes them or if something like from Distillery comes out that I'm absolutely dying to read. But I'm going to need an app. I am trained to open up an app and all my books be there and just go, as opposed to finding the website, opening it, having them send me a two-factor authentication code just to get in, doing all the fiery hoops and everything to actually get into the
Real? You had to
thing.
do all that?
I did,
I
yeah.
didn't do
And
any of
every
that.
time, that I wanted to go and check it out, I needed to do that stuff.
I logged in one time and I've been
Oof.
able to pull it up and go straight into my books every single time since then.
No, it was a very, I'll be honest, it was a very frustrating like
Damn,
series
Canada.
of things to get to where I needed to go. And then even then, like I looked around and I feel like the layout of their stuff, particularly with Distillery, that was really the only publisher that I explored, because it's quite frankly, it's the publisher that's not available on the app that I already have. So I went to go and look at the Distillery books. I can't make heads or tails of their release schedule. Like, how much of the book am I buying? Is there going to be more? Because there's stuff that came out from them that I'm like, oh, I remember when I wanted to read this, and I'll look, and it's still just blah 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 number one, and that shit was like last year, and there still isn't another issue. So like, what is the cadence of the release schedule for some of this stuff?
Well, it's interesting that you say that to that specific point. I was on the Comic Book Geeks looking at some Distillery books, and I happened to look at the comments, and there was a guy saying, because there was a book there that I really wanted to read, and there was a couple of people saying that they have been waiting for issues 2 and 3 of some other book from
Oof.
Distillery
Yeah.
to be released to them. And I thought, okay, interesting. Is that a Distillery thing? Where their books haven't been coming out.
I don't know. Like they have the digital versions, but then they also offer these like hardcover versions, and they're right there with the other ones. And I mean, granted, all you got to do is just make sure you do the reading and know what you're buying and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm always a little bit trepidatious when it comes to new things, especially with like all the hacking that I've had going on and putting my credit card information out there, and what kind of protections do they have set up. And I'm also curious, isn't one of like the perks of using Neon Ichiban that you actually own the comic?
So I think there's a couple of things. I think you can own them, but I think that's where that marketplace comes into play, and you can put them on the marketplace
Yeah, I
for
don't understand
others.
that. I don't know that I'm ever going to engage with that.
I'm still digging into that, to be 100% honest, but it is out there. So the marketplace, if you're able to go up there now, interesting. It's funny they have something remarked in a different language. If you go into the marketplace now, you'll be able to see other books. They're out there, and the impression that I get is that you should be able
Your
to
pressure that I
like
get.
buy them, but I'm trying to figure this out. They have like Absolute Batman number one on the marketplace, $390. I don't know what that's all about.
What?
So I don't,
What
that's what I'm saying. the fraction number one, or the Bob I
Kane number
don't
one?
know. I don't know. So I'm trying to figure out, but you can buy the digital is $4.
That
Obviously, but
sounds
I'm
like
trying to
the
understand.
Diablo auction house from Diablo
So,
3 when it launched. God, that was a nightmare.
I'm trying to understand, like, what do they mean by this
I don't I'm not
marketplace?
going to worry about that aspect of the
Yeah,
website
so
yet. They
that's later.
can take their time and figure that out. I'm not interested in that. I just like, if I go, so you bought a book from them. Did you
I
read
bought a
it?
book. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna see my
When
life
you
around.
were reading it, were you just like, when you hit next page, was it bringing you to another web page?
No, it was just doing the guided thing the way Comixology does. The guided reading view.
And you were able to download the comic.
It's in my library. It's in my collection. I'm able to. I suppose I have one issue. It was White House Robot Romance. You'll hear
Oh,
about
I
that.
yeah, I was actually looking at that one.
So you click it. It says there's a little link. It says read on the web. It opens up and it's almost just like it's in Comixology. So I just hit
So it does have a
the
reader.
yeah. So I just hit the what do you call it? The right arrow button. It just went
All
through in
right.
guided view.
Okay, I'm a little bit more interested. I'm warming up.
And it gives so at the bottom, I just looked at this. At the bottom of this, so it gives you a little breakdown, so event from to price, et cetera. So just like store purchase, distillery, and who did it. And it gives you a description, and then at the bottom it has three checks. One is it resellable? Checked yes. Remarkable? Checked yes. And downloadable? Checked yes. So I guess you can do that. I guess you can sell it to whomever else.
So I'm curious,
That's
I want to get more details about how that works. But I don't have it right now. I didn't have an opportunity to go into
You're going
it.
to get all kinds of yahoos trying to establish their own little stores
Well, give everyone
on
an
there. They're going to
opportunity.
have to, I hate to use the word police, but they're going to have to look after that,
Yeah, well, what
especially at the
exactly are you
beginning.
selling? Is this another non-fungible token thing?
I don't
You're
know.
selling them a digital, you're selling them a digital file. You're not selling them a book.
Absolute NFT.
Yeah.
So I
Yeah,
don't know. Let me see. Let's look it up.
let's see what we're doing here.
Live on the air research.
Why not?
Great
Neon
radio.
Ichiban. Marketplace.
I got a comic book question for you guys, but I have a feeling it's gonna completely depart us from this conversation, so I'll save it.
Perfect. Go. Oh, okay. I was gonna
Oh,
say.
I can. You know what? I'll ask you because it's probably something really simple. And I think I've asked this before on the show, so bear with me. But when you're reading comics and you come across the bolded words in dialogue or whatever, those are just meant for emphasis, right? But like when you read them, how do you read them in your head? Because I often struggle with certain words that they want me to like emphasize. They don't seem like the right ones to me sometimes. And I'm wondering if I'm missing something.
Some people might not do it correctly. Not everyone's using, the Oxford commas and all that sort of stuff. But generally speaking, if you italicize or embolden a word, the idea is that should have a beat to it. It should have some weight to it.
Right. Like I was
It's how
reading
you create comic timing in a paragraph is by.
Captain America earlier, and you turn the page and like the two bolded words are something like punching fascists. And I was like, well, I get that. Absolutely, let's bold that right there. But then there's other ones that they'll just be talking to each other and all of a sudden it'll be this dark black ink. And I'm like, this doesn't feel like a conversation where you would like lean in to that word, but I could be wrong. I could be
I
reading
don't
it
know.
wrong.
I just threw that book open. It's at the top of my pile. And there's a moment of action where one of the characters says there are only 10 bodies here. But the word 10 is bold. There are only 10 bodies here. Where are the other two hostages? So if you read it out loud and gave that more
That
volume, more
oomph.
weight, that oomph, it would make more sense than flat out reading it. You got to remember when I was a kid, 4,000 centuries ago, sentences in comic
Dinosaurs
books,
roam the earth. Go
yes,
ahead.
sentences, every sentence in a comic book ended with an exclamation point, not a period.
I think that's because Stanley was screaming all the time.
Well, it was DC too. It was everybody but EC, quite honestly.
Who
It was the only
decided
company
that all
and
comics
Classic Comics.
were gonna be all caps all the time?
It was just easier when they were hand lettering books
True.
90 years ago. And back then, there were words that you weren't allowed to use in comics because of bad ink. You couldn't use the word flick in a comic book
Oh, wow. I see where you're
because
going with
the
that.
L and the I would run together and you'd get something nasty. No, that's the truth.
I'm sure it
Scat's on.
is.
So while you guys are having that conversation, Google AI told me
That's what we were hoping for.
Ichiban is a new digital comics platform for comics and manga. Oh, the marketplace launched in 2025 by David Steinberger and Chip Moster, former executives at Comixology, aims to innovate digital comic space by incorporating features that provide fans with more interactive, ownership-focused, and collectible experiences. So, what does that mean?
It means they
Collectible
got a
digital
big check
comics.
from Amazon, and this is what they did with it.
So it says collectible digital comics, a platform allows users to buy and sell digital comics and other collectibles in a secondary marketplace, adding a new layer of value. Digital signatures and remarks. With the consent of participating publishers, creators can add unique, verifiable digital signatures and original sketches directly onto a digital comic file.
Sounds like the bastard cousin of Substack.
So it goes revenue sharing. When Digital Comics are resold, the original publisher and creators receive a portion of the revenue, creating new income streams for the industry.
I like that. I like
Same,
that.
yeah, same day releases. The marketplace provides access to new comics and manga releases on the same day they are published in print. And then publisher support. Major publishers, including DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, Comixology, I'm sorry, Comics, Kodansha partnered with Nihonichiban, and we also see over here that Dynamite is scheduled to join them as well. So I guess there's that marketplace is probably going to be the distinguisher. And they also the direct
Payment to creators.
influence and payment to the creators. That is, I would think, is what the industry is going to be paying attention to. Because, you want to make sure that that's not just lip service and that they're
But
actually
well,
going to do that.
the industry does. I don't know if the publishers will go that
Yeah,
route.
we'll see.
But I still say, okay, now I've got a digital autograph that I can sell as an NFT. I love it.
I think
It's like
I guess
digital
the
trading
autograph will.
cards for $50. It's
Well,
like,
yeah, I guess it's part of the file itself, I guess, to be
yeah.
able to say, hey, so and so did this. I don't know. I guess I want to see it in practice. If there's like a YouTube video or something out there at some point that I can pull up to make see it in practice, we'll see. But
And maybe it's just me. I shouldn't say I'm aggravated. For it's our book club this Thursday, and it was our back to school book club. We read Fahrenheit 451.
Oh, cool. I read
Which,
that.
okay, we're now talking about, not books. And in that book where everyone is just watching television and not reading books anymore, it's sort of, okay, here we go. It's happening. Oh, Ray
Don't
Bradbury
watch
was
that
right.
Michael B. Jordan Fahrenheit 451.
I was trying to watch some of it, and it was awful.
Yeah, it was not good. It
Here's
was
the
not
thing,
good.
the original movie from 66 by Francois Truffaut isn't good either.
Yeah. Good
So,
story, good concept. Just
Michael B.
yeah.
Jordan said, "Let me talk to you about Sinners." He's like, "I've redeemed
Yeah.
myself."
I
Well,
love that movie so much.
it's what Michael Shannon too, right? It's a good cast
Yeah.
that and it has nothing to do with the book at all, except they burn some books.
So, all right. Well, let's get into some
Anyway.
comics, speaking of books. And I'm gonna shake things up once again and put myself first. I know how to treat
Good
me.
for you.
So I'm gonna go first with my lightning round. And we'll see how this goes. So as we mentioned earlier, I did go on to Nihonichiban and pick up a book from the distillery called White House Robot Romance. Chip Zdarsky, Rachel Scott, Harmer Bonvillain, Arianna Meyer, as a distillery book. I had no idea what to expect when I looked at the cover of this, but the cover was just cute to me, so I figured why not give it a shot? We have a scenario where the book starts where you are in a limo with you later find out is the president of the United States and a lot of his hangers-on, and they're discussing something that's pending, on the international scale, on an international scale, and come to find out it's the president's plan to basically invade or strike against Canada because of a terrorist-like attack that occurred that they are putting at the feet of Canada. Now, let's stick a pin in that for a second. We then go and find out that there are some other characters. One, Service One, which is a robot, a little older model of a robot who is essentially a secret service for the president. And then we have another, Chef Nine, who's basically, this isn't the word in the name, a chef, works in the White House, is a chef for the president. We have a bunch of other, like I said, side characters who are there. Now, why is this important? Service One is actually coming back from being repaired because, due to a recent assassination attempt, took a bullet for the president and was severely damaged. Chef Nine is the chef who cooks directly for the president. And while he's been recovering, Service One has been on duty to basically taste the president's food. So they've developed a little relationship there of a friendship and conversation, et cetera, et cetera. Now stick a pin in that. We now have two additional characters. One is the doctor who basically helps to build and program and repair the robots, and his live-in boyfriend, who is frustrated because of what he is seeing on the news about the growing tensions between the US and Canada, and things escalating, and he still has family back in Canada, and he's curious and concerned about what's going on there. So we have these three things all happening. Okay. So we go back to the president. The president's an asshole. We go to
What else is new?
yeah, I mean, it's just, set the stage. But we go back and we get more of the relationship between Service One and Chef Nine. It's cute, it's antagonistic sometimes, it's sarcastic at other times. Chef Nine seems to be a little bit more, I don't know, easygoing, whereas Service One is sort of like almost like a military type. We do find out through our conversations with the doctor and his partner that the robots are programmed to evolve and feel things. They're basically designed to emulate what it feels to experience something, because it in theory will help them identify human threats to the president and other members of the cabinet easier. So that is setting a tone for us, realizing that they have, some layer or level of emotion, within them. Well, we come to find out that even though Service One successfully stopped the assassination attempt against the president, there are those who feel as though he should have caught it before it even got to where it was. And so they have decided to decommission him. Chef Nine doesn't like that. And I'm just gonna say she because it just comes off that way. She basically launches a little bit of a plan to deal with that. Now, I'm gonna leave that there. That plan, oh, I'm sorry, I'm gonna take a little bit further. And that plan involves them escaping. She doesn't want him to be decommissioned because for her, that is, you're killing him, where he could just essentially be put into another space to do something else. So she feels like that's just, you're murdering him. So we're going to put that there. We're going to go back to the doctor and the doctor's boyfriend and come find out there's a little bit more going on with them, because it looks like the doctor may have done some things while he was repairing and doing updates on the other robots that could have influenced this, unknowingly as it may be, but all the same influenced. All hell breaks loose, the robots escape. Now, let's return back to the president. Why is the president flipped out about this? The president is
He
freaked out
can't get
about
his bacon
this.
cheeseburgers.
Well, no, because remember, Service One was a Secret Service agent. Service One was in the room when all sorts of things were discussed and done, some things that may or may not be legal and may or may not be taken lightly by the Canadians or the international community. Basically, what that robot has seen can screw them over, send all of them to jail, and sort of tip the scales, an international platform. And he's just like, and you just, and basically he's finding out that they just let this robot leave with all of that information. So everyone's got their individual motivations. The robots just want to live. The president wants to save his ass, and the doctor and the boyfriend want to protect their Canadian, family. So there's three stories happening all at once. They're all interconnected, and when this all lets go, when this all sort of caps off at the end, we see the robots show up on the doorstep of the only person who might be able to help them. And I'm not going to spoil that. We're going to leave that there. A lot going on in this first issue. I believe this first issue is about 40 some odd pages. I think it was 42 to 44 pages, maybe 48 pages. I can't remember. A lot going on. I see what Chip Zdarsky is doing with his multiple through lines that are all intersecting and coming together. I like that relationship between the robots. I like that they explain away a lot of the things that so often books about robots sort of just expect you to believe, that there's a reason why they have some sort of an emotional response to things. They were put in specifically to make them more capable of identifying those same types of emotions in others, so they could be a little bit on, they can be on higher alert. I appreciate that. I like the art. I sometimes wonder if the art might have been maybe a darker tone, you know, maybe even shifting tones throughout the different stories might have helped sort of express better from the book's perspective what part of the story we were reading. Maybe like a maybe darker colors in one where the president was involved, maybe lighter colors where the robots were involved, and maybe, you know, something else where the relationship was involved. Just my little nitpick. I kind of wanted something that would be a little bit more striking. The art's not bad. The art is good. I just, you know, I wonder if there was opportunities to make it a little bit more, I don't know, striking. I just remember some other Chip Zdarsky stuff I've seen, you know, where he's working with artists that, you know, maybe would have lended themselves better to this. I'm going to continue to check it out because now after the cliffhanger, I kind of want to see what's happening next. And so, you know, we're just going to make it happen. So that's it. White House Robot Romance number one, Distillery. Check it out wherever distillery books are sold. The next two books that I am going to talk about are actually just issues one and two of New History of the DC Universe. I bought them a while back. Well, I bought the first one a while back, and then I bought the second one because I kind of wanted to see what they were going to do. Writer Mark Waid. I think we have an art because there's differences between the two. I think we have Jerry Ordway and Brad Walker, and then we have Todd Nock and Mike Allred. And then, you know, we have what was it, Patricia Melville and Matt Hearns and John Cayles and Laura Allred for some of the colors. So essentially what this is doing, it's basically identifying for you what continuity is right now, what DC continuity is right now. And I think it's going to happen with four issues. Essentially the major plot points with the first issue, going into the cosmic beginnings. I have some notes here. Covers the cosmic beginnings and the early evolution of the DC universe, the creation of the universe, early cosmic entities and concepts. It talks to the mythics and pre-superhero eras. It talks about Atlantis and the Parliament and of trees and all that stuff. It basically hangs out in the Golden Age for a while, talking about the JSA and the Seven Soldiers of Victory and how they all came about. And this is all being told from the perspective of Barry Allen, as someone who is documenting this as he was able to, as you know, he's been able to exist through all of the different crises and sort of see the differences in the multiverse and all that stuff. So he's writing it down as a in story, he's writing it down as a record of what was. From a book perspective, from an organizational perspective, this is basically saying, okay, this is now continuity. You know, I think the first book goes into the destruction of Krypton and Superman coming into being, et cetera, et cetera. The next book sort of takes you into the Silver and the Bronze Age. You're going to be talking a little bit more about the emergence of Batman and Wonder Woman and all that stuff. Again, more into Superman, you know, landing, things that happen with Aquaman, the Flash and the Green Lanterns, specifically how the Lantern Corps started, not just with the Green Lantern Corps, but also with Alan Scott. And really just saying, okay, this is continuity, that's not this. So if you're someone who's read through the years, basically saying, this is continuity, that's not continuity. This was continuity before, this is continuity now. So anything we tell you, any story we tell you moving forward, this is what you need to consider to be continuity. And again, it goes through the Silver and Bronze Age. It talks about the big ticket items. It also talks about the crisis, you know, the various crises. I think it goes into Crisis on Infinite Earths in this one. But there's going to be two more, and I believe in those two other issues are going to continue to talk through the other crises and where things land now on the post, I'm sorry, post Flashpoint, post Death Metal, and what's what. I enjoy always reading stories about the history of the DC universe. I don't know why I do. I've read them for the show in the past. I enjoy reading those books. This is interesting. I'm curious to know how others are perceiving this because you're always going to have those people that are just like, that's not what happened. This isn't continuity. I will say, Bob, as I was reading through it, they did talk about. No,
Why
well, listen, and I'll tell you, because they talk about an Amazon who was molded from clay and given the powers of gods. So I don't know if that means that her clay origin is back on the table, but that's what they discuss. So I guess that's continuity now. So take it for what it is. Anyway, New History of the DC Universe. I found it interesting, especially as I'm reading, was it Slugfest, that sort of battle between Marvel and DC book.
It's
So
like
it all kind of.
DC KO or something like that.
Yeah, so well, no, there's a book that was written in like, I don't know, 2019, 2020, something like that. It's called Slugfest, and it's basically a story about the battle for dominance between Marvel and DC. So reading that book and then reading this was sort of just sort of like added to that. Last thing I'm going to talk
Awesome.
about, super,
Go
super
ahead.
quickly, Girl Beyond the Gates. All right.
I was waiting for
So,
this. Here we go.
okay, I'm going to be super quick.
Do what you gotta do.
Crazy Alice snatched Chelsea, locked her up in a cabin and tried to feed her birthday cake or wedding cake or whatever the hell it was. Chelsea said, "No, bitch, no," and choked her out with a chain just in time for the police to get there. So she was able to escape, but Crazy Alice with her bug eyes, I'm sorry, she went all the way to the left. Anyway, I love that her cousin Kat is the new Jessica Fletcher of daytime dramas because she basically was tracking down that mystery and solving it and finding out where she was all through social media and everything else. Ugh, it was everything. Meanwhile, Leslie, the thorn in everybody's side, found out that she is the long-lost daughter of one of the Articulettes, which is basically based on the Supremes, and that one of the members, the quote unquote Diana Ross member, has been basically trying to right a wrong that she felt like she did years ago by creating a fund for her. And over the last 20 or 30 years, she's been adding to that fund to the point where that fund is like a small fortune. And come to find out, Leslie is the inheritor. Why is that important? Because Leslie is the woman who broke up her daughter's marriage
Oh,
by having an affair with her husband.
dun dun
And
dun.
just when you thought Leslie was about to be run out of town because she was as broke as a joke, Leslie is now a millionaire. She got her first check, and she's going to get a check every 6 months. And that first check was for $1 million. So, yeah, things just got real. Anyway, moving forward, Vernon and Anita are going to have some trouble on their hands because, it looks like there's a new character coming to town. That's going to be wreaking havoc, not just the havoc that Leslie's going to be wreaking. Everyone's a little concerned that Bill and Danny are getting a little bit closer because, if you might recall, I mentioned earlier when the show began that Bill and Danny were married until their daughter's best friend, Haley, came into the mix. Yada, yada, yada. Bill and Haley are married now, and Danny is off to the curb. But it seems like they haven't quite let each other go just yet. Now the romantic tensions are building, and I don't really know what Haley's going to do. Haley's about to, I don't know. There might be a second person dragged into a cabin somewhere and trying to be fed birthday cake. I don't know what's going on, but it's interesting. There's a lot going on. I don't want to use up too much more time, but there's a lot going on Beyond the Gates. If you're not watching it, you're missing out. I'm just saying. Catch up. Anyway, that's my lightning round. Boom.
Now, my LCS showed me the new history of the DCU because it's the Allreds. And I was close. I'm interested in such things. I guess I'm really cranky tonight. But my real problem with the book is not that it's brilliantly put together. It explains so much of what the continuity is right this particular second, which may not last past the end of the year.
Well, again, that's why
It's
they made
like
a point of saying that this is kind of what it is now. So whatever, I think they're doing that specifically because, and this is just me theorizing, but the way that it's written up here, I think they're doing that specifically because they want to set the tone for stories that are to come and say, all right, these stories are coming. This is what you should consider continuity. Also, I think people have been complaining about the DC continuity becoming a clusterfuck again, but I do
It's
see your
been that
point.
since the 80s. Yeah, but the thing is, if they're going to change it again,
Listen,
which
I
is
don't know.
certainly possible, after
I
the
don't.
dawn of DC becomes the midday of DC or whatever they're going to do.
Well, you remember a couple of weeks ago, I was reading a book. A few weeks ago, I was reading a book, and they talked about a quote unquote crisis is coming. So who knows? Who knows? So anyway,
So
I just
unless we
thought.
get to the fourth issue, look, Mark Waid is a great comics historian. So I was close. But they're not cheap issues. Are these $5 issues? I
I think
think.
they're $5.
Right.
I think they're a little bit
So to
longer, but they're
lay to
like, I
lay
think
out
they're
to,
both like 30, 36 pages, 38 pages each.
yes. Of course, there isn't a real story. There's text,
No, it's
but
not a
there's not a
story.
real.
It's literally a history. It's not a plot, blah, 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 blah. It's like, this is what happened. And they frame it that way with Barry at the beginning. Basically say Barry is, he's been tasked to be the historian of sorts.
So for me, it's just $20 that may not matter 6 months from now. I'm out for now, but I appreciate that you loved it and you've got me antsy to buy it.
Well, I didn't say I loved it. I said I liked it.
Okay.
But no, I enjoy reading history. I love reading history of the organ of the different universes, both for Marvel and for DC. Yeah, I just find that overall to be interesting because I recognize that I, unlike you, Bob, I wasn't there for when things were coming out in single issues, you know, like you and John, when you guys talk about things that happened in the 80s and the 90s, I wasn't there as engaged. So when I go back and I read these history books, it gives me a little bit more context than I probably had before. And I do the same thing with there's a few YouTubers. There's one I'm gonna hype her up, you know, I'm gonna give Canada their props, called Casually Comics. And I say that because she's Canadian. But she does these really in-depth, I think I put it in our Signal chat. She does these really in-depth historical sort of overviews of particular characters, you know, that are even obscure characters. And Bob, she does a lot of these on Lois Lane in the Golden Age that I always think about you when I'm reading them. But she's funny and she's always super respectful of the source material. And it's just good to see the history because I don't know. I realize there's things I don't know. So that's why I enjoy reading the history books. But that's it. Any questions? Any comments? Anything you don't understand?
I think it's funny that in exploring the Neon Ichiban stuff when I was going through the distillery books, that of the books that I was going to buy, the Robot White House one that you spoke of, like, was one of the top contenders. But all I needed to do was look at the cover, and I thought about Beyond the Gates for whatever reason. And I was like, I don't need to buy this because I know that Aaron is going to pick this up. And he's going to talk about it at some point on the show, and then I can make a determination then. It sounds cool, but it doesn't sound at all like what I thought it would be. I don't know. I love Chip Zdarsky, obviously, and I do trust that there's some fun to be had there. I just now I'm still not sure if I should dive in. I did though, while you were doing your thing, I did make my first Neon Ichiban purchase.
Woohoo. What did you purchase?
I grabbed Blasphemous number one from Mirka Andolfo for $5. And I hit it. It asked me if that's what I wanted to buy, if I was sure. I said yes, and it immediately opened up whatever their reader is, which is a little bizarre in that it is a tap reader. It is not a shuffle the page to the side, turn the page thing, a swipe.
Just
So
tap
have
guided
to,
view. Again, it's
yeah,
a
I have to
guided view.
get used to that, I guess.
So that's how I read all my books in Comixology, so
Oh, I
I
don't.
can
Whoa.
relate.
No,
But
I'm a zoomer. I like
no,
to zoom around.
I want to know exactly how they want me to read it. All righty. So who wants to go next? Steve, why don't you go next? We can wrap on
Sure.
Bob.
Yeah, I got a couple of things that I could share. I've been busy Friends, I've been really, really, really busy. I feel like I owe everybody an apology to a certain extent that I haven't been bringing as many books to the show lately. I've just been swamped with stuff. I got a couple of really cool articles going up. I've seen some cool movies in the last little while. I reviewed the new Demon Slayer film, Infinity Castle, having seen only one episode of the entire franchise of Demon Slayer. So that was an interesting exercise in futility. It's awesome. I recommend it. I had a lot of fun. It didn't matter that I didn't know anything. It's very flashy. It's absolutely gorgeous. And Bronwyn and I had a really good time with it. My review for it is over on Joe Blow, as is my review for Futurama, season 13. Excellent. I haven't always been that big of a Futurama person. I've kind of dropped in and out from it over the years. And it is, man, that show, either that show has always been really good or it's gotten really good, because whatever magic they've got, they've still got it. This new season is very, very timely and very smart in how it delivers its lessons. And there's one particular episode that, let's just say, uses statistics to tell a story, and there's a twist at the end of the episode. And when they reveal kind of what's going on and what's happening, it's one of the cleverest things I've ever seen on TV, let alone a animated comedy from Matt Groening and company. So kudos to them. Really, really good stuff. I'll get to comics in a minute. I've been to a couple of shows in the last week. I went to go and see Faytooth and Slow Crush at the Velvet Underground in Toronto. Absolutely fantastic. Really super like droney, witchy type of rock. Not as many people in the venue as when I went to go and see Failure there a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic. Actually, no, post-pandemic. Or maybe just the start of it getting over itself. I don't know. Either way, I'm really glad that I went, because as it turns out, a couple of days later, I open up my phone. Velvet Underground, a legendary venue here in Toronto, is closing. And I believe it's closing at like the end of the month. So
Wow.
I've been to one of the last shows at this absolutely legendary venue. It's a real shame. It's a fun place to go and see a show. It's easy to get to. It's cheap to park. It's got decent sound in there. And yeah, I've only been there twice, but I'm glad to have checked it out, because it's going away and that really sucks. I imagine the rent in that place is astronomical, especially in today's day and age. And then the other show that I went to that was absolutely awesome was I went to go and see Wet Leg at History, in also in Toronto. Phenomenal, phenomenal show. The show sold out in 14 seconds flat. I don't know how I managed to get tickets, but I did. I saw them 3 years ago at the Phoenix, and they were tremendous. But man, it's incredible what some bands can do when you're as young as they are and you get all this confidence from the success of your first album, and you use that success to grow as artists and to be smart about how you go about your career instead of just throwing another album out there to, capitalize on the hype. They took their time, they built their confidence, they came back super strong, and they put on a hell of a show this past Friday night. Really, really enjoyed it a whole lot. I went with my friends Brad and Colleen, and it was a good time. On the comic book front, I wish that John was here, because I read and caught up with Absolute Batman. Poof. So Absolute Batman is a trip. If this is something that, in my estimation, started off as this kind of cool, experiment of this alternate Batman with this really funky Spawn-like costume, outfit, whatever that he wears, with this kind of sentient cape and ears that break off the top of the cowl to be thrown like knives, and so on and so forth. And it was all like, Alfred's got his beard. He kind of looks a little bit like Ra's al Ghul's cousin, whatever. It's entertaining. It's a little bit strange. Bruce is friends with the Riddler and Oz and Waylon and a couple of other characters. Harvey, like they're all pals. They all play poker together, and just an interesting setup for a bat book. And then the Abomination arc comes along. This is the Bane-centric arc that John was talking about the last time that he was on the show. This is a completely different book now, in my estimation. This is some of the most extreme comic book reading that I've probably ever read, especially like in recent times. I can't remember being as kind of entertained and blown away and what as I was reading something, as I was reading this. Bane is the way that Snyder writes him in this book. He is an absolute terror. He is a specter. He is haunting. Everything that is written about him, his backstory, every move that he makes, how intelligent he is, how resourceful he is, how absolutely unstoppable he is. It is some of the most terrifying stuff that I've ever read in a bat comic, and I am positively loving it. The latest issue, which is issue number 12, out on stands now, not in the app yet. I actually went ahead and bought it because I was just so hooked by the time that I was done with 11, and 11 had some of the most extreme stuff in it yet. I can't believe what they're doing with some of these characters. This is the issue. I'm not going to spoil anything, but like, this is the issue where other characters get their like push into their villain arc. They've all been kind of pals with Bruce up until this point. They at this point in the story, they do know that he's Batman, and they've been warning him that this is a path that you really can't come back from, and you're not aware of the consequences of this identity and this mission that you've self-appointed for yourself and how it's going to blow back on you and on others. And Bruce is so obsessed that he, doesn't really pay it too much mind and he goes about his business. And now with Bane in the picture, Bane's whole thing is like, I'm going to break you. And how do you do that? You go after people that people care about. And that's exactly what happens in this issue. And holy shit, there is some stuff that goes on here. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but if you're caught up with Absolute Batman, you already know. If you don't, ask somebody. Go read it. It's so good. I read Court, Children of the Round Table. This came out last week. This is written by Tom Taylor, art by Danielle. How do you pronounce this? De Niculo. So if you're a fan of like Once in Future or Kid in King Arthur's Court, or just the Arthurian tales in general, this is absolutely a book for you. Tom Taylor writing, it's going to be precocious and adorable and also like kind of edgy, cool teen attitude-y and stuff like that. But this is exactly what you think it is. It's a group of kids that go off on an adventure. They all like to play like Arthurian tales with one another. And while going on this new mission, a meteorite lands in the park and basically explodes and gives everybody enchanted weapons. And the story kind of goes from there and ends there in this first issue. I'm getting some real like Arthurian Power Rangers vibes coming from this, which is pretty damn cool. All the weapons have oh man, I don't want to give too much away. Let's just say there's a couple of surprises with the weapons. What do the kids do with them? What does it mean? Where do they come from? Is it aliens? Is it something from the past? What the hell is happening? But I absolutely love stuff like this. Arthurian tales always kind of get me and entertain me. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Green Knight, that came out a couple of years ago. And of course, there's been all kinds of other things, The Sword and the Stone. I mentioned Once in Future earlier. And yeah, this is another one of those really well done. And if you're in the mood for something like that, but has a little bit of a lighter touch to it, this has that for you. So definitely go and check that out. I read a couple of other things, but I'll bring them to the show maybe another week. I started reading Spectators, and I don't know what to think of it yet. Joey's finished it. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he said that he enjoyed it and that it was weird. I've gotten to the weird. I don't know that I've gotten to the enjoy just yet. I absolutely love the art. It's got like a colored pencil sketchy style to it, and it's essentially about, see, I'm just gonna end up talking about the damn book anyway. It's about people that have died, and basically they don't go anywhere. They're spectators. They stick around and they watch the living, and they just kind of hang out until they don't hang out anymore. People do eventually pass on, but these people don't know how. And it's not necessarily a matter of unfinished business. It's something else, though I haven't discovered exactly what that is just yet. But it definitely is weird. The main character that we follow through the book was actually somebody who died in a hostage situation inside of a movie theater, who was shot by a gunman. And is now, walking around as her like mid-90s self, basically watching people do it and dropping in on people, thinking of them as their, living, breathing soap operas. And she finds interesting and strange people and basically ghosts around and follows them and watches what happens with them. But she lives for a long time. So you're talking about like 300 years in the future. And you kind of get to see the world as it is 300 years from now, and people indulging in their strange habits. And she ends up meeting a cowboy or something, and that's kind of where I've left off in the book. I'm gonna keep going with it, but I'm a little surprised by how like lukewarm I am on it so far. This has all the Steve trimmings. It
I was
has
going to say, it sounds like a Steve book.
It does. It really does. And you know what? And it might end up being exactly that in the end. But so far, I'm just kind of like, eh, all right. Like I said, I dig the art. I like the style. I'm not bothered by the nudity or the sexual content or anything. That stuff doesn't faze me in the least. But I'm having an issue where I'm doing the unfair thing where I'm comparing it to other stories. Like we had, what was it, Carmen from a couple of years ago that I read, that I absolutely loved. And, but that had like an emotional core to it. That had a really harsh lesson to be learned by the end of that book. There was something else too that I read that was similar to Carmen. That I also enjoyed. And so I would put this in that same category, but I haven't gotten to the point where I'm like, this was awesome or anything like that. It is 300 pages and I'm only about 100 and change in, so I've still got a ways to go and there's plenty of time for it to grow on me and reveal itself. So we'll end up seeing what happens with that as we go on, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I got other stuff I could talk about, but I don't necessarily have to. I watched Nobody 2, which was a lot of fun. If you like the first one, you'll like the second one. I think the first one's maybe a little bit better, but still a good time. And
Oh, that's the one I was telling you about, Bob.
yes, indeed.
yeah, it's fun. It's any movie with Bob Odenkirk kicking some ass and taking some names, and Christopher Lloyd running around having a grand old time while he's still with us. I love that dude so much. Yeah, that's pretty much me.
I have not read any of the Absolute books, so I think what I might do is, since there's a couple of arcs out, I guess now for most of the books
That
at least,
absolute Wonder Woman, man. That's the one.
so maybe I'll dip into one of those just to see what all the hubbub is about.
That's the one.
But
Batman'll blow your Doc Martens off, though, I'll tell you. It takes a turn after the there's like a two issue Mr. Freeze story that's also very cool. But once they get to that Bane stuff, I was like, I was qu quite scared of Bane in this book. I've read some Bane in my day, and he's never kind of lived up to the reputation that he was kind of known for when I was a kid and not really reading comics. But he was always kind of this like specter that hung over the Batman, like, oh, he broke the Batman and he's this and he's that. And I'm like, yeah, I've read a couple of things with him, and he's all right. He does his thing. He's kind of there and he's in a story and he's thrown his weight around and then he's done. And this one, he is like this calculated behemoth that is just unflinching and will literally break you in any and all ways possible. And Bruce is kind of the Energizer Bunny in this series, where he just keeps coming back and keeps coming back from the brink of death. And everything that they're putting him through is so extreme and violent. And like, that's not always what I want from my Batman books, like not even in the least. Like, if you ask me to choose between the Fraction or something like this, I'm Fraction all the way. But like, I'm glad that this other thing exists, just because it is so strange and so unlike anything Batman that I've read, certainly in any number of years. And it's been forever since I've checked in on Scott Snyder, and I'm not reading any of his other stuff, but it's really cool to see him get the keys back to the castle and then have that playground be his own. And this is a whole new world, different origin stories, or at least altered origin stories for certain characters, new characters that are introduced. And I'm loving it from top to bottom. There's a splash page at the end of issue number 11 that just my jaw dropped. I was like, what in the hell am I reading? What is happening in this book?
I'm gonna dig in. I'm gonna jump out. I'm probably not gonna do them all at once. I'm probably gonna pick one and go from there. But yeah, we'll see. We will see.
I want to check out
Bob.
more of them. I want to check out Absolute
Well,
Green Lantern.
Steve, I'm going to jump into your music thing just for a
Yeah.
second. Not that I know either of these bands, but I just to say, as someone who's watched a lot of places close, if you get one more chance to go back to the Velvet Underground, which is so famous, go.
Yeah.
Just go, because in my time, there was a club in the Lower East Side called Tonic that John Zorn ran for about 10 years. Avant-garde experimental stuff in a basement with drinks in like plastic cups. Just incredible. The Bottom Line, the Cat Club, the Fillmore East. I can't tell you how many nights in the Lone Star Cafe and got to be there the last night. Go for it. No matter who's playing, just to say, as a music person, that I was there the night.
I'm
It's like,
looking right
I,
now.
yeah, you should, because I. We made a huge trip, some friends of mine and I, and they end up staying open for a while. But we thought the Stone Pony in Asbury Park was closing.
Oh, I've been
So
there.
we drove, this is in the 90s, drove from Long Island to Asbury Park, New Jersey,
Yep.
which is 3 hours on the Garden State Parkway,
Yep.
because you want to be there before it disappeared. So if you get a shot, go. Just do it.
I saw the Deftones at the Stone Pony,
Nice. It's
and then
a dive bar, but a great
yeah,
dive
it's a
bar.
total dive bar. We went to see Deftones, and then we went over to the Silver Bowl
Okay.
Museum
Okay,
right
yeah.
after.
Yeah, lovely.
It looks like they're open till the end of October. I thought they were closing October 1st. I think it's actually November 1st.
Nice way to spend a Halloween.
Yeah. Oh God, we already have like three different plans for Halloween this year. Bronwyn and I are going a little crazy.
Make one more pilgrimage. Well, I'm going to
I
say
will try.
you'll not feel bad about it.
I mean, I did
That's
just go, so
yeah, but it's a month out. Trust me.
yeah. I'll try. I'll do my best. I think if I buy any more concert tickets, Bronwyn's gonna disown
Bring
me.
it along.
I'm going to see Korn and Gojira on Monday, and then I'm going to see Sleep Token in Detroit on Friday.
Are you
So
going to do that? You're going to cross the border?
I did it for Nine Inch Nails a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
It was fine. It was totally fine. It was not a problem at all.
I don't know, those robots are invading Canada, right, Aaron?
Just
I mean, I
saying.
can't say what's going to happen for this trip, but I mean, they didn't seem to give a shit. We were just going. I mean, the venue is quite literally maybe 15, 20 minutes from the border. And we were there and back, and you know, it
No
was some of the easiest
one.
time I ever had going across the border.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to start learning some discipline. I've got problems. I have my summer concert schedule has been absolutely insane, and I need to start prioritizing having talks with myself.
I'm going to regain
I don't
control of this. I'm going to
know.
regain control of this, and I'm going to say, Bob, you got some comics you want to talk about?
Sure, I have three what you would call doomed books to talk about. So here goes.
Doom, 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 doom.
Captain, very nicely done. Captain America number 3 by Chip Zdarsky, Valerio Rashidi, Frank Martin, and Joe Caramagna. Well, for me, there were many parts of this I thought were just absolutely excellent. Back and forth between Victor and Steve, the stark reality of the scenes in post-9/11 Iraq. But I gotta say, and spoilers here, folks, sorry. And I know this is going to sound ridiculous. I was taken aback by Dr. Doom having murdered the hostages he took from the US Embassy.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, across his 60-year comics history, he must have taken the lives of thousands of people. But that's mostly in the abstract, right? We don't really see it. So it's probably, certainly, the point of this. So I guess kudos to Chip Zdarsky for really putting that out there. It affected you too, the way it did me. It's like, wow,
Yeah,
I'm good.
I was a little disturbed, more than a little disturbed by that. I
Yeah.
was quite surprised.
Thank you, Chip, I guess.
Mister.
Now, over there in then One World Under Doom number 7, where Ryan North, RB Silver, David Duriel, Travis Lanham. It opens on the aftermath of the debate between Reed and Doom, and our emperor has put down a protest by killing 96 people. That played much differently to me, having just read Captain America. It
Yikes.
really hit home in a way that, and that other talking heads reacting to this in the book, to that and other reprehensible acts of their cult leader. And they did it with complete disinterest toward their fellow human beings. It's just absolutely chilling. And sadly, it's an honest commentary on far too many folks in our world, too. So there is a regular comic book story that follows here. It's very much deepened by that opening, gotta say. So as the combined heroes try to take out Doom one more time, that leads to a really cool entrance that I'm not going to spoil. But a brilliantly evolved character moment. Look, I know I'm the non-event guy, but Ryan North has really made this work here and Fantastic Four, and I've not read anything else but those two books, and it's just completely worked for me. So, speaking of the FF, while killing time at my LCS of over 40 years, Long Island Comics, I was flipping through his dollar boxes and came across really, a couple of winners that I'm going to bring to Nikki on our book club night this Thursday. I picked up Ryan North's Fantastic Four 19. That's the film noir issue where Alicia's a private detective. And the Fraction All Red FF1, where the Fantastic Four each choose their own stand-in. And of course, Johnny's sleeping with Lindsay Lohan, basically, and forgets all about it. So, really fun book. I'm going to go back there tomorrow to get my books and hopefully see if number 2 of that one is in there. I think Nick could get a kick out of both of them. Now, I also found a real rarity, an American reprint of Keiji Nakazawa's I Saw It. Now, a couple of weeks back, I spoke about Mr. Nakazawa's Barefoot Gen, and this book, published as a special issue of Shonen Jump in 1972, was the seed that began that longer work. I saw it as Keiji Nakazawa's true life account of living through the atomic bombing of Hiroshima, the loss of most of his family, and the horrible aftermath, which includes him literally carrying the bones of his father, brother, and sister in a bucket to a funeral parlor.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. After their house burned down and took them with it after the explosion. And then through that, how he would ultimately express his grief and horror through a career in cartooning. I've been aware of this for years, but never had the chance to read it until now. And I think the weight of all those years really heightened the experience. It's a truly remarkable work, brought me to tears. It's just incredible. I'm sure it's online somewhere, but this came out from a little company called Edu Comics, which tells you that I'm sure they didn't make any money, but what an amazing book. And that's it for me.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I caught up with Captain America. I read 1 through 3. I read one back when it first came out, but I read 1 through 3 this afternoon before we got together, and I'm absolutely loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. I can't remember. I think maybe the last time that I enjoyed a Captain America this much was, what was it, Ta-Nehisi Coates?
Ta-Nehisi Coates, the great run.
Yeah, yeah, that run was fantastic as well. I will say, though, I am slightly, and this is a me thing, I am slightly confused by the like the setup of, I guess it's, Captain America was in the ice and he came back, and this is just a story of him coming back later than usual. Because you have Conrad running around.
Right. That number has been pushed up through the years. You have to remember when Stan Lee brought Cap back in Avengers 4, it was only 20 years after World War II.
Okay.
And it's always now been, excepting the movie where they did let it be the 70 years, it's always changed to sort of fit the moment. Here, he will have a longer career between these books and where Chip will eventually go, I guess. But now it's just post 9/11. So we're looking 2002, 2003, probably. And the world Steve comes back to. And so in between, they have this new Captain America. It is a little daunting. I think reading three of them together might have helped. For you.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly was able to follow it, but I think the way that the narratives or the God, what are those panels called? Not panels, not monologuing. What the hell? Exposition.
Exposition.
Yeah. So some of the exposition, I was like, oh, so all the blue stuff is Cap. And then I guess the kind of script, is that also Cap, or is his name Conrad?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those things that maybe I'll get used to it a little bit more now that I know. But watching the two different Caps and their two different approaches to justice and to like loyalty to the I guess the core, or whatever you want to call it, the Howling Commandos, or just the he's not in the army. Right? Like, what is the organization?
It's Army.
It is Army.
It's a division of the Army, yeah.
Okay. I'm really bad with differentiating that stuff. I'm terrible when it comes to that stuff. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't enjoyed a Cap this much since Ta-Nehisi Coates' stuff, and I cannot wait to see how Cap reacts to what goes down at the end of this latest issue, because we've seen it before. And it feels just as extreme now as it did back when it happened in, let's just say, a certain Marvel show.
So I read I think I read One World Under Doom number one when it first came up, but I don't know if I read the other ones sequentially. So I recently caught up and basically read all of them, again, up till six, and then because seven hadn't come out yet. And I surprisingly enjoyed that experience. Well, I shouldn't say surprisingly, but I think what I enjoyed about it was being able to do it all in one sitting. And then I read seven, and I have to say, did we need seven to
Well, we
move the
haven't seen
story
eight to
further?
know how it all we we'll see how eight
Well,
plays
because I
in.
mean, and I only ask that because seven ended. I'm sorry, six ended where it ended. Dun dun dun. And some truths are laid bare and all that stuff. But then seven starts, and I guess we are seeing some of the aftermath of that. But the issue was mostly a commentary issue, with the exception of the confrontation, the one confrontation that did happen. But I don't know if it was in the series, it was the first one that I said, I don't know if we needed this issue to either improve or take away from the story. I was just curious what your thought was about.
Well, I think it's happened a few times in the book itself so far. The idea that no matter what Dr. Doom does, there are people who are going to be quite happy with it because, well, I get to have health insurance or I get to have my bread or whatever, and he's got crime numbers down and immigration's better and okay, all right. So the first four or five pages of Talking Heads are in that, and then Sue is commenting about that. Did we need another battle scene? That I think we could have. I might have been happy with the whole issue of Talking Heads.
Yeah, probably, to be honest with you. If it moved the story forward,
Yes.
I felt like this issue was duplicative in some ways. But it is what it is. I'm not saying I'm not enjoying the story. I am, and believe it or not, I'm actually enjoying the One World Under Doom, just the main story. I'm not reading any tie-ins or anything of that nature. So I'm sure I'm missing some things, but I think sometimes the value of an event is whether or not you can just read the event and get a good solid story out of it. So
Yes,
there's
and
that.
far too often you can't, and that's why I cited Ryan North as making this work. Reading the FF book helps, but even that's not necessary.
Yeah. And I'm reading the FF book, but that's because I've always been reading the FF book.
Yeah.
So, any other thoughts or anything about the books we read?
Nah, just that I'm really enjoying. I'm enjoying the era of Doom in general. Because I'm also reading Runaways, which is centered around the Doom stuff, and where we're dealing with Doombot and Doombot's autonomy, and what is his place away from his other Doombot brethren, and how does he function within the Runaways family and stuff like that, and that's also been really entertaining. So it's just been like a win all around for the One World Under Doom stuff since it started. And it's nice to have an event that is feels grand, but the reading load is quite light, and that doesn't always happen. And I think they really knocked it out of the park.
I think after this, they're going to have to rest the character for a while, for a little while.
Good luck with that movie
The
coming out,
movie's
man.
coming. I know. No, I when I say after this, I mean I'm including that movie.
Oh
I
yeah,
think they're going to
certainly. But I
rest it.
mean, yeah, I don't know. Do you think it's just gonna be those two movies, those two Avengers movies, and then they're gonna cool it with him, or are they gonna keep it going for as
Well,
long as they can?
let's be real. They haven't always aligned the movies with the books with the movie, so there's no guarantee that they'll do that. But I don't know. I don't want to get to the Wolverine phase. I don't know if when I was I had to walk away from all things Wolverine for a while because he was just peeing on everything. And I mean, he was marking his territory all over the place.
Yeah.
So, so what do we read this week? So, just to run down again, Captain America number three, One World Under Doom number seven, Fantastic Four 19, and Fantastic Four number one. I saw it, a one shot. New History of the DC Universe, number one and two. White House Robot Romance, number one. Absolute Batman, number 5 through 11. And Spectators, original graphic novel. So let's do the thing where we tell everyone what we're sort of looking forward to this week. Who wants to go first? Bob, what are you looking forward to?
World's Finest 43, Fantastic Four number 3, Phoenix 15, maybe Deadpool Batman? Maybe.
Oh.
I was thinking about that.
I
I think
didn't
it's
picture you for a
$9 though.
Deadpool Batman.
I was contemplating it.
$9 and there's some extra
Whoa!
story. There's some extra stories in it that intrigue me, but I'm going to have to look at it in the store first.
I was wondering who was going to be the guinea pig. I assumed John was going to be the guinea pig, so I
I'm
figured I would
sure he
let
will.
him by.
That's a price tag.
So I am also looking at World's Finest and Fantastic Four, but I'm also going to read number two of Justice League Red, and then there's a book coming out called Good Is Dead, number one. What about
Sweet.
you, Steve?
What do I got here? I've got Fantastic Four number 3, G.I. Joe number 11, Exquisite Corpses number 5, Runaways number 4. Rick Remender's The Seasons, number 8. Still haven't talked about it on the show, but I am caught up. I don't know why I keep putting it off. I Hate Fairyland, number 44. There's an Absolute Batman, number 1 for Batman Day coming out. And then I'm going to try to get my hands on the comic This Ends Tonight, number 3, but I've yet to read 1 and 2. I don't know if I'll make it to that one, but we'll see. Thinking about it.
Cool.
I might explore a
I'll
Neon Ichiban a little bit more instead of picking that up.
dip your toe in there for a little bit.
I am. I think by the time I come back to the show next week, I'll have more to say about that. I'm gonna maybe check it out later tonight when I read Blasphemous.
Cool. Well, all right. Well, I think it's about time for us to get out of here. Does anyone have any last remarks or anything of that nature?
Really quickly,
Go ahead,
really
Bob.
quickly. Go ahead. No, go ahead, Steve.
No. Mine's just a general thank you to the audience for hanging out with us and bearing with us while our schedules, kind of fly around willy-nilly for the last little while. It's nice to know that people always are sticking by us and listening and kind of rolling with the punches. That's it.
Cool.
Go ahead, Bob.
Mine's related to that. I had a lovely email from Victor, who is giving us a belated thank you and celebration of our 700th and how he continues to listen and love what we're doing. So thank you, Victor.
Ooh,
Awesome.
that is nice.
I did also want to say a couple of things. First, if you are someone who is planning on going to New York Comic Con and you're listening to the show, jump into the Discord. That's kind of where we're going to be having those conversations as the day comes closer about, whether it be just connecting while we're there at the con or maybe doing something, a meetup or somewhere afterwards. But if you're so inclined, jump onto our Discord and have a conversation about it. And the other thing is, listen, we recognize that the world is on fire and things are happening fast and furious, and not always good, both domestically and internationally. So we hope that this little 90 minutes that you get to spend with us talking about, ridiculous stuff, helps with that. So engage with us, connect with us, let us know, how things are going with you. And we'll continue to keep trying to put out something that is worthy of your commutes, I guess.
And
That
I'll say
being said,
it helps us.
yes,
Not
it
only
does.
you reaching out to us, but it helps us to reach out to you because we need it too.
Exactly. Get to know us. Having said that,
Also,
oh, go ahead.
one quick thing. If you're looking for Discord access and you've sent an email and not gotten a response, I've been having a little bit of issues getting into the into one. We have like multiple Talking Comics emails. So the ones where the info at talkingcomicbooks.com stuff, I finally got back into it, and I'll be sending out Discord links to anybody who needs one
Cool.
of those.
Cool. Having said that, dramatic pause and waiting to see if anyone else has anything else to say. All right. So we have reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us comments or questions to our email, podcast@talkingcomics.com, or you can hit us up on the Discord that we just talked about. We're also on Instagram at Talking Comics Podcast. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Still the old fashioned email. Bob Breyer at talkingcomicbooks.com.
Steve?
I am at dead underscore anchoress online.
The others are somewhere out there in the ether, but I am at Aaron at talkingcomicbooks.com. You know how to find this if you really want to. If it's meant to be, it'll just happen. Thank you again so much for listening to us. Take care of yourselves. Until next time, to be continued.